Okay, chapter 21. Well, let's open in prayer, John. Father, thank you for giving us your love, for showing your love to us in Christ and forgiving our sins, making us your people. And we'd ask that you'd be with us, strengthen us, encourage us in your word. We might grow up into you and be pleasing to you in all our ways. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you take the reading for the first part of this, John?
Now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go out free and pay nothing. If he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. But if the servant plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free, then his master shall bring him to the judges. He shall also bring him to the door, or to the out, or to the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. And if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. If she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. And if he has betrothed her to his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. If he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. And if he does not do these three for her, then she shall go out free without paying money. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. However, if he did not lie in wait, but God delivered him into his hand, then I will appoint for you a place where he may flee. But if a man acts with premeditation against his neighbor to kill him by treachery, you shall take him from my altar that he may die. And he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He who kidnaps a man and sells him, or he who is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. And he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. If men contend with each other, and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die but is confined to his bed, if he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who struck him shall be acquitted. He shall only pay for the loss of his time, and shall provide for him to be thoroughly healed. And if a man beats his male or female servant with a rod, so that he dies under his hand, he shall surely be punished. Notwithstanding, if he remains alive a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his property. If men fight and hurt a woman with child, so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, he shall surely be punished accordingly as the woman's husband imposes on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. But if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. If a man strikes the eye of his male or female servant and destroys it, he shall let him go free for the sake of his eye. And if he knocks out the tooth of his male or female servant, he shall let him go free for the sake of his tooth. If an ox gores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horn in times past, and it has been made known to his owner, and he has not kept it confined, so that it has killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. If there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life whatever is imposed on him, whether it has gored a son or gored a daughter. According to this judgment it shall be done to him. If the ox gores a male or female servant, he shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. And if a man opens a pit, or if a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls in it, the owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to their owner, but the dead animal shall be his. If one man's ox hurts another's so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money from it, and the dead ox shall also be divided. Or if it was known that the ox tended to thrust in times past, and its owner has not kept it confined, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall be his own.
Is that the end of the chapter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I did read prior
Oh,
to this meeting
okay.
what Link says. And he doesn't go into the laws concerning violence, or basically he stops at 12 thir verse 13.
Okay.
But what he says about that is that the this is a type, this servant is a type of the perfect servant of Christ. And he said something, well, he said lots of things, but some of the, I'm trying to remember the things he said. One of them was the piercing of the ear, or the boring of the ear is a mark that would have remained with that servant for life, which is true of the antitype of Christ, where he bore the marks of the cross even when he appeared to the disciples. He showed Thomas. Revelations, it says, I saw him as one who has been slain. So it's still, so he bears those marks as the servant would. And the reason why it was done at the door is for the same reason that the blood of the Paschal lamb was put on the door, because the door is, or the doorpost is the part where there's, it's making a distinction. Not everybody can walk through the door, only the through the door. So it's only those, it only applies to children of God and those within the family. They're not universal. But what I thought was really interesting, and I'm hoping that this is beneficial, was that he said that in what did he say about the 6 years? Well, he said six is the number of man. And that refers to, I think, Christ's work on this earth. And then on the seventh year, he shall be released, which is the number of completion, which he said was like Christ. But what I thought was really interesting is when it says in verse four, I think, what is it?
If the master give him a wife and she's born children.
Oh, I'm sorry, five. But if the servant plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. He says that that's, again, a perfect, like the order is perfect, because it says, I think he was saying, what caused Jesus to leave his position in heaven and condescend to take the role of a servant on earth? It was love for his master.
That's a good point.
He said it was love for his father, his master. And then he said, so that's first. And he goes, well, who's his wife? If it is. And that's why it's, I think he quotes that verse, what is it? Israel first and then to the Jews
Yes, and you
first.
first, and then also to the Gentile, right.
Right. And then the children are that, are the Gentiles, are the nation that's going to be gathered in. But I thought that that order was really interesting, that it, he said that's what Christ did. It was love for his father, for his wife, and his children.
Very interesting. Interesting. But this is all, this is the typological application. Are there
Yeah.
any other applications from this that you could see or?
No, No, I want to see if there's anything else that I missed. There were some good things in here. But I think I covered everything.
Okay. I tend to, I'm not dismissing the typology. I'm just saying I when I read these, I tend to look more specifically on what the law was and what was it trying to accomplish. For instance, this rule in verse 3, if the slave came in single, he shall leave single. If he had his wife shall leave with him. But if the master gave him a wife, and she's born him children, the wife and her children shall belong to the master, and he shall leave alone. I think this gets down to the property aspect, because if he gave him the wife, actually he's giving him his property. The master is. She would have presumably have been a slave too. So then if he releases the servant in the seventh year and has to give him the servant, that has to give the servant the wife that he had given him, he's losing his pro he's losing more property than would have been required by the year of release.
Right, but you can't give something and take it back. That's called
That I know, no, you can't. Seinfeld
exactly.
again.
You can't give something and take it
I don't know that he meant give in that sense. But anyway, I think it probably has to do with that economic aspect of it.
Okay.
Because, in other words, what was his remains his, but what wasn't his that was given to him as a slave is still the master's property. Just like, I don't know. Well, that's the only thing I can figure it means.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's what it means too.
And the reason it makes a distinction with the daughter who was sold as a slave is because I think culturally, if she were released or given her freedom, it wouldn't necess it would be a punishment as much as a benefit
Right.
because of the fact that she would have no means of support in that society. Nobody would want to marry her because presumably she was already the sexual property of this master or his master's son, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it, there are more specific rules because obviously, since she's sort of treated like a wife of the, if she, you know, he has to treat her the same way he would as if he had a wife, as if she were a wife. Don't know if they'll see.
What's that?
No, I'm just looking at this. It's difficult because the fact of the matter is, we're not under the law, and neither are we under the law, nor is the government that we live in obligated to keep these laws.
Right.
So,
Well, that's another thing that Pink was saying, and I know you know this, but I think it's a good point is that there's three different laws. There's the moral law, which is the Ten Commandments. Then there are ceremonial laws, which Leviticus gets into that, where things like cleansing and stuff like that. And then there are what's the third one? Laws that pertain to
Governmental law.
of Israel. So there's the ceremonial. It's, wait a second, it's just right here.
Yeah, ceremonial would be,
The priesthood and stuff like
the
that.
priest, the laws pertaining to the priesthood and the sacrifices and the temple.
Me a second. What chapter are we? 21.
21, this is.
Why? And I hope I'm not forgetting me why I'm even bringing this up in the first place. But, Oh man, I just read it and I can't find it. Oh well. In any case, there are laws that the nation was supposed to operate under, like these. Then there were the the ceremonial laws, and then the moral law. The moral law is universally binding, whereas the other ones just pertains to Israel as a nation. I guess you were saying that we're not functioning under these laws, Dad?
What I'm trying to get at is, well, it's frustrating because you can read this, say one of these laws, and that if you were to do one of these things in our society, you would not face these consequences.
Right, and
You might
so
face different ones, and in some cases, you might face worse consequences, sometimes less. But you can't read them and say, "Oh, yeah, that's the way it is," because it isn't that way in our society.
right, but you're saying it's frustrating because there's wisdom in this and it should be
Well,
this.
that's the thing. How do you draw the what's the application for us today then? I guess is the point I'm trying to make. And I think there is some, but it's hard to find it. Obviously, like if you read, he who insults his father or his mother shall be put to death. Nobody's going to get put to death if they insult their mother or their father.
Oh, it's pretty amazing.
But it's not going to happen, right?
Right.
So, and you if you tried to enforce that, or unilaterally, you'd be arrested for murder.
Right.
So the only thing you can do is you can say, well, obviously it's a serious thing in God's eyes that your father or your mother should not be treated with disrespect. So that's how I would I think when we read these, that's how I think we can approach it to get instruction that we can profit from, because we really can't profit from it on the purely legal level, because it doesn't have an application.
I know it's really, I read this and I feel the same way. It's like, man, it should be like this. It's pretty straightforward. There
The
are
way it should
consequences.
be, I don't. I think it was Paul who said that the law is made for sinners, not for the righteous, right? Because I was going to say, well, it'll be this way in the kingdom of God, and maybe not. It depending on I guess on what stage or who you're talking about, because when Paul says the law was made for sinners, not for the righteous, what I think he's saying, like in this one case, insulting your mother and father, if you're righteous, you're not going to do that. If you don't do that, this doesn't apply.
Right, all laws are made for sinners.
So, yeah, instead, but I mean, what Paul is envisioning is a time in the future when we're mature in Christ and we're living Christ-like lives. And will there be a law, or will the situation in the kingdom be that, and I'm not talking about the millennium, I'm talking about the, let's say, in the New Jerusalem, where when it's the completion of what all of God's work is completed, will there be the need for laws when the New Jerusalem is comprised totally of righteous
Maybe
people?
it'll be like a libertarian utopia.
Yes, it wouldn't have to be libertarian even, because libertarianism is really very strongly based on the assumption that everybody's evil more than everybody's righteous. Liberalism is based on the assumption everybody's righteous.
Right.
Know what I mean?
Libertarianism is based on the fact that everyone's evil. That's true.
But I think the kingdom, what Paul is talking about is based on the assumption that everybody is righteous, but it's going to be not just an assumption or a delusion, as it is if you try to think it's true today, but on the reality of the fact that Christ will be fully manifested in his people in when we are totally free from sin and fully manifesting his life in the ultimate kingdom of God. But again, I think we can still learn, because you can see what things are displeasing to God and what things are pleasing.
I like the restitution aspect. And that's the biggest problem with justice nowadays. You know, it's like someone breaks into your house, kills your son, the criminal goes to jail for 3 years. It's like, well, and what do you get? Nothing. Or it could be worse. I mean, somebody could go through your house and, I don't know, set your house on fire.
No, it's very bad. Not only don't you get
Everything.
anything, but you have
That
to.
person goes to jail for 3 years. Like, and what do you get? Nothing. It's like, but I need to be restored.
Yeah, and it
There's no
doesn't.
restoration, right? And it's like that's, and that principle, I think, comes out here clearly.
Yeah, and I know it's that is one thing that our governmental system doesn't address at all, or very, very, very rarely. If you're burglarized, you're tough luck.
Yeah. I mean, the only one who wins.
You might get, so if they recovered the property, you might get whatever they've recovered back.
Right.
Sometimes.
But the only one who wins is the system, because they get to process him through the police, process him through the courts, all the lawyers, and everyone's getting paid as they file him through the system. But you, as the victim, get nothing.
Well, that's the way it is. What can I say, John? That's why I think our system is predicated more on the idea of, if you want restitution, that's why you buy insurance. Seriously.
The other thing that I wanted to say is this: under the animal control laws, verse 28, I like how it says that, if an ox hurts someone, the ox should be killed, but the owner is acquitted. However, if it was known that had a propensity to do this, now the owner's responsible. And that is something that that's what I was saying before, Carmen. If there's someone who gets arrested for drunk driving and the judge lets him go or lets him go out of jail, fine. Next time that person kills someone drunk driving, now that judge goes to jail. That's how it should be, Dad. I'm being serious. Why do you think that that's funny? I mean, By you freeing that person, you're essentially pledging for him and saying, I know that he's never going to get drunk again.
Okay, the reason
But when
I'm
he does,
laughing.
if you really believe that, fine. But when he does, now you go to jail. Don't you think that would change everything?
I'm going to reserve my judgment and on this one, John, because it's a very complex question, but we can talk about it.
No, it's
I'm
fine.
not want to give you a definitive answer because I can't.
I just
The
think that if
reason
you
I'm
had
saying
all
that
like
is
that.
right now, this type of question is what's being debated in the Supreme Court. And it has to do with whether or not Donald Trump can be prosecuted for acts that he committed in his official capacity. Same thing, judge. If the president can, you're saying, well, what about the judges? And in fact, that's one of the questions or that was recently raised. Ironically, there's nothing in the Constitution that says a judge can't be prosecuted for his actions. But in fact, I heard some discussion on this the other day. They're saying even though it's not said, there's like an unwritten rule that it's never done. Because if it were done, it would destroy the whole justice system. Because then judges would never be able to render a decision that they felt was proper because they'd be always considering what might happen to me if I make this decision, not is this the right thing to do? So
Right.
what you're proposing would have that effect.
Right. I want them to be very
But
careful about letting
you
people have
do
it.
and you don't, because they're obviously, if everything in an ideal world, if you only hold the judge accountable when he truly did something wrong, that would have the effect that you want. The problem is when you allow it can be abused too easily. How do you
Yeah.
know it's only going to be applied against the judge when he's done something wrong? How does the judge know that he isn't going to be accused of doing something wrong when he had no idea that it was wrong and had no intention? Just like the things that they're accusing Donald Trump of. Do you see how ludicrous some of these things are?
Yeah.
But they're not ludicrous to the people who are making the accusations. They believe in with all their heart, I think, that what Donald Trump is a criminal and everything that he's done is criminal. And he should be arrested.
I think that they're only saying that because they want to be in
No, I think they really believe
the
it.
election.
I mean, if you listen to MSNBC or CNN, the commentators, I mean, they were going crazy last week. In
Yeah, I
fact,
don't want.
there was this, I didn't see this by watching them, but on YouTube, they were talking about how the commentators were saying these Supreme Court judges that just rule that Trump shouldn't, or implied that Trump shouldn't be held accountable, that they're criminals
Oh, wow.
for saying
That's
that.
kind of like what I was saying.
And it is, you see, and if this rule were in effect, they would be impeaching and or prosecuting all the judges that sided with Trump.
Right.
So,
It would be, we'd have now.
but then the effect of that, and that's what Donald Trump is arguing. He's saying if you let this go through, no president is going to be able to act in any real capacity. He's going to take the most bland approach to everything. Even when he should be aggressive and should be acting in a strong manner, he's going to be scared to do it because he's my defense of it.
That's really interesting.
So that's why I'm saying this is a very
Maybe
complicated.
that's why the kings of the earth willingly give their authority over to the beast.
Because
Because it gets to a point where all of these figureheads can't really do anything. They don't have any power, or if they do, they're afraid to use it.
Well,
So
there's an aspect of truth in that, I think.
and
I
everyone's
think it's
just
already that way
when
to
the
some
peace
extent.
comes on, it's like, okay, you want my authority? I'm just a figurehead anyway.
Yeah.
Everyone turns over their authority to the beast.
Yeah, and it takes you off the hook too, because
Yeah.
then you can say, well, I'm only doing what I've been told. It's the old argument that creates all the problems in the world.
I know, that is so true. I'm just doing what I was told, which is basically saying I'm not responsible for my
Yeah,
actions.
right. And that's what everybody wants, as we keep saying. All right. But there are principles here that are, you also see in these laws, I think, a lot of things that are part of our law. This whole idea of liability is very strong. When a man opens a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or an ass falls into it, the one responsible for the pit must make restitution. Why? Because the presumption is this reasonable man idea. If you do so, take some action, you are responsible for that, and you should be held accountable insofar as a reasonable man would have known or not, that what he's doing could cause harm to others. And that's a strong principle in the Bible. So when you just can't go around doing things and saying, well, if they're stupid enough to fall, this is the way, when we were kids, that's the way we used to think. Well, if they're stupid enough to fall in, that's their problem. And my father would say, no, you can't do that. You can't say that.
You just dig a pit and say, if someone's stupid enough to fall
Yeah,
in it,
oh, we would,
then they deserve to fall in
oh
it.
yeah, that was our attitude. Really was. And it was wrong.
I don't get that. I don't understand. How were you stupid enough to fall into a pit? You're just walking along, minding your own business, and then you fall. How is that your fault?
Well, we were extreme libertarians when we were kids. Everything was the other guy's fault. That's why I don't like libertarianism, because it tends to take that kind of a.
I mean, to me, it's like that's totally irresponsible to do something like that, you know?
On whose part?
The person digging the pit.
I agree. But I mean, you can also see that how other some people could take it the other way. I know I did when I was younger.
That's funny.
So,
The guy at the jiu-jitsu class always
yeah.
says that. If you put someone like this, if you do this move on someone, he goes, you can very easily break their arm. On the other hand, if someone is attacking you at a bar, they probably deserve to have their arm broken
Oh.
anyways. You know, like that's his whole thing. It's like if you're forced to put someone in that position, they probably deserve to have their arm broken as well. You know, I guess that makes sense, right?
Yeah, that's addressed here too. When men, in verse 18, when men quarrel and one strikes the other with stone or fist and he does not die but has to take his bed, if he then gets up and walks out during his theft, the assailant shall go unpunished, except that he must pay for his own idleness and his cure. So this says, if you get in the fight in the bar and you hurt the other guy, you are responsible at least for the damage that you did, that you caused, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Now,
Again, you wouldn't want to break someone's arm in that case because then you'd have
no, because
medical bills and
you'd have
everything
to
else
pay for the medical bills.
and him being
That
out
is
of the
loss
bar.
of time.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so it could be pretty expensive.
Yeah. So, interesting things to consider.
Yeah.
There's more in it than meets the eye sometimes.
Yeah.
Going to read on in chapter 22. I don't know what the first, my first verse, verse says. If a thief is seized while tunneling and he's beaten to death, there's no blood guilt in his case. If the sun has risen on him, there is blood guilt in that case. Now, what do you think that means?
Well, I'm trying to read mine.
Yeah, go ahead and read your version.
Because yeah, I wasn't following what yours is saying.
Yours
Mine's
says, yours
a
probably
man
says is that if
steals an
it's
ox or sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep.
okay, it's the next verse. My chapter
Okay.
begins
If
with
the
the next.
thief is found breaking in and he is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. If the sun has risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. So if someone breaks into your house and you kill them, you're not guilty.
At least in this culture, you probably
But
would be. And I
in
don't know
today,
today, I don't know if you would be. You might
get in
be.
trouble for it. Yeah, no, you definitely get in trouble.
Yeah.
All of the my magazines that I read, they state that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. If someone breaks into your house, they have your children at gunpoint or your spouse at gunpoint or whatever, and you have to use lethal force, you're still going to get arrested and you're still going to go to jail. Any single time you pull out your gun and shoot it, you're going to get arrested. So just know that. That doesn't mean that you're going to be found guilty of
Guilty,
murder.
but you're going to have to face trial.
You will be taken to jail that night or
Actually,
stuff.
this doesn't say you wouldn't have to face trial. It just says that you're not to be found guilty.
I think that what this is saying is that if someone breaks into your house and you kill him, you're not guilty. However, if you maim him and he lays there for hours to where the sun has risen, now you are going to be guilty because you
That I don't think that's what it means.
didn't kill him mercifully.
I don't think that
You
has
let
to
him
do
lay
with
there on the
mercy.
ground and die and suffer, and you should have just put him out of his misery.
Don't think that's what it means.
Oh,
Because it doesn't say anything about how long it takes him to die.
well, I think that's what it's suggesting if the sun has risen on it.
What? No, you know what I think it means, John? I think it means if the thief broke into your house and you didn't do anything. He broke in, he stole something, and he left. And then you hunt him down the next morning and kill him. After the sun has risen, you go out and you hunt him down and you kill the thief. That's when it becomes murder.
What difference does it make?
The difference is the presumption is that when he is breaking into your house, your life is at risk. You don't know what he's going to do. He's taken the initiative to violate your house. And so the court
Oh,
now
I see.
is going to presume that the presumption is that you acted in self-defense. Whereas once the sun has risen and it's a new day and he's not, presumably you meet him or you go after him and you kill him. It's not self-defense.
Then it's vengeance.
It's an act of vengeance on your part. It's an act, and therefore it's murder. That's my interpretation of it.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Oh, so mine says in the commentary regarding the sun has risen on him, to strike the thief after the act would be considered inappropriate use of force. So I think that's what I get it. So I was way off. Mine wasn't just like, don't leave him there laying on the ground for a couple of hours. That had nothing to do with it. I know my father's saying, if it's in the act, if you're caught up in the moment, in the heat of the passion.
Well, what if you, in the heat of the moment, you had no intention of killing the guy,
Right, like that's like OJ.
you picked up a 2x4 and you hit him over the head, and he doesn't die, but he dies the next morning. Well, you didn't intend that. That's just, how do you know when he's going to die?
Right.
So I don't think that's what it means.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. If they break in and you kill them, that's that. But
But
if he
again,
gets
what did
away,
that
you find
you're
out.
in our legal system, anybody's guess as to what, well, first of all, a lot would depend on what the jury decided.
Yeah. No, in our world, it's a mess.
Yeah, you don't know. It's really hard to know where you stand
Yeah.
in anything because the decisions are seem so arbitrary.
Yeah, they really are.
And I think that's disturbing because that, to me, because it sort of breaks down confidence in the justice system, in the fact, or breaks down confidence that there is any justice, which is very demoralizing to a society.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. If there were clearly defined
Well, even if it isn't so
number
clearly
and
defined in the
source.
law, if it were consistently, if the law were consistently interpreted in the courts, you would still know. But we have judges now who get so creative in their interpretations, and you can get radically different interpretations depending on the court you're at. And when you get a jury involved, you don't know what's going to happen
Right.
because what.
I know it's a mess.
It's not good. Well, not in my opinion, it's not good.
No, I agree. It's a joke. I mean, I saw that when I was on jury duty last time.
Yeah.
It's a total circus.
And it even you listen to the news and people talk about it, like the jury is to be manipulated to get what you want in
Yeah.
the trial. And so the two attorneys are trying, they do, that's part of their job to manipulate the jury, to put on a show and arouse their emotions and do whatever you need to do to get the verdict that you want. It's kind of crazy, but it's how it works.
I know it's not good.
Verse 4, when a man lets his livestock loose to graze in another's land and so allows a field or a vineyard to be grazed bare, he must make restitution for the impairment of that field or vineyard. When a fire is started and spreads to thorns so that stacked standing or growing grain is consumed, he who started the fire must make restitution. So in both cases, and like we said with the ox that gores, that gores. You got to take responsibility for your acts. You
Yeah.
can't, like we would have done when we were kids, go around lighting fires. Oh, if it burns down the place, we didn't do anything, we just lit a fire.
Right. I
And
lit the fire. I didn't know it was gonna burn down like that.
we really used to think that way. It was so bad. I know. When a man gives money or goods to another for safekeeping and they are stolen from the man's house, if the thief is caught, he shall pay double. If the thief is not caught, the owner of the house shall depose before God that he had not laid his hands on the other's property. In all charges of misappropriation pertaining to an ox, an ass, a sheep, a garment, or any other loss where one party alleges this is it, the case of both parties shall come before God. He whom God declares guilty shall pay double to the other. What it's saying here is when you entrust something to another person to keep it for you and it's lost, it's not the person's fault who you entrusted. He's not responsible to make restitution to you if something happened to that property that's beyond his control. Only time he's responsible is he did something actively, if he misappropriated your funds. So that's why they had the oath. That's why they went and he says depose him before God. They went to before the priest, and the priest would administer an oath. Do you swear that you didn't, take any of this man's money that he entrusted with you? And if he said yes, I didn't, there would be a curse associated with breaking that oath that if, well, that God will judge you then if you in fact did and you're lying about this. And that's how they resolve it. Because you couldn't prove it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about this. So if I give someone a book to read and they destroy my book, They're not responsible to
You
restore.
said they destroyed it,
Yeah.
then they're responsible.
Well, okay. What if their dog ate
That's a good question. Was he known to eat books? You see what John,
He was never known to eat books.
he was never
It
known
had
to
my
eat
scent
books.
on it, and for some reason, he wanted to eat it because he's like, "What is this?" And there's a
You
foreign
know,
stuff.
this is why I'm glad we're not under the law and we're under grace, because under grace, we can take responsibility for things even beyond what the law requires. I can't answer how, I don't even know what the answer to that question would be.
I think that they have to restore my book.
Well, I think what you would, in the Old Testament times, you would have to go before the judge. And they would make the determination, just like the two prostitutes did when they went to Solomon and
Yeah.
complained that you would say, I gave this person my book, and he let his dog chew it up. And the other would say, I didn't chew it up. I put it on in a up on the top of the bookshelf, and my dog knocked the bookshelf off and the over and chewed the book up.
Or no, an earthquake
Or an
shook the
earthquake, yeah, whatever his story.
was on the ground, then my dog ate it.
But the point being that you're saying he acted irresponsibly, and he's saying, no, I did act responsibly. This was something beyond my control.
Yeah.
And the judge would have to decide. I think if it was me and I borrowed somebody's book and my dog chewed it up, I would offer the guy to buy him a new one because I would feel terrible about that. That's
Yeah.
what I'm talking about, you know. Grace has a better answer sometimes without the law.
Right.
When a man gives to another an ass, an ox, a sheep, or any other animal to guard, and it dies or is injured or is carried off with no witness about, an oath before the Lord shall decide between the two of them that the one has not laid hands on the property or the other. In other words, the guy gives you a sheep to guard, and you kill it and eat it. And then when he says, "Where's my sheep?" you say, "Oh, a wolf carried it off."
That's messed up.
Yeah. So they used to decide that you had to take an oath that that's the case before God, otherwise you'd be held accountable.
That's another interesting aspect as to why we don't abide by these laws today. Because could you imagine something like that? It's like, hey, where's my dog that I had you watch on the weekend? It's like, oh, the
He ran.
coyotes must have
Coyote
carried
got him.
off. And it's like, oh, okay, well, we're going to make you swear to God. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it would have no
Whatever.
consequence.
I swear. It's like they don't care. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean anything to most people.
But you know what? I think back in those days, maybe they cared for a reason. Maybe because when God was being honored, or being entrusted to make those kinds of decisions by the law that God did enforce. In other words, there's to have a system like this implies that you are trusting in God.
Yeah.
And when you put your trust in God, God's going to behave differently than when you don't. Because following the principle of that's in the Old Testament to the wily, how does God it say to those who are upright,
If
I'll
I
reveal
show myself
myself
justice.
uprightly. Those
Yeah.
who are crooked, I'll.
So I think what you're saying is, even if someone were to say falsely, oh, yeah, I swear that I didn't, and they're lying, even though it doesn't mean anything to them, because it means something to me, God will honor that.
No, I'm saying that this
Or just as a
the pe
society.
if the society as a whole trusts God enough to institute a system like this, that God will honor that trust by acting in a way to back up the to put consequences to the oaths. When you have a lawless society that doesn't trust God, a society that does not trust God can have all the oaths you want, and they're the ones that's why people have no respect for the oaths, because they don't, there's no respect for God.
There's no fear of God in them.
There's no fear of God from their eyes. So why that? So to have the oaths have no, they don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. Although they still make people swear.
They do, and I don't know why,
I know.
because
I mean, that's a big
it doesn't prove anything.
right. I've thought about that. Again, when I was on jury duty, you have someone come in and they swear that I'm putting my hand on the Bible and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to tell you the whole truth. Okay, we've heard your story. Now someone comes in, also places their hand on the Bible and tells the complete
Exact
opposite
opposite story.
story. Like, okay, stop. Both of
What?
you just swore to tell the truth. How do we have such drastically different accounts?
Yeah.
Someone's lying. How are you lying when you just placed your hand on the Bible?
Somebody's lying.
Right. I mean, that's crazy, right?
I know. I know.
I don't know. I wouldn't
That's
do it. I wouldn't do it. You know
no.
what I mean? I'll just tell the truth.
It's the way it should be, but
I mean, I even told that to Carmen. It's like if I ever, like, because we watch all those shows where people murder their
yeah.
spouses and stuff. And it's like if I'm ever hauled into the police station, I'm like, all right, the gig's out. You know what I mean? I wouldn't even waste their time. Right? I was just like, yeah, I did it. I mean,
But I think
what's
these people
up?
think they can get away with it. They're lying because they figure that's the only way I'm going to. I can, if it weren't for the fact, if I don't have to testify against myself, nobody's going to be able to prove that I did it. And I'm surprised, because I didn't think you had to testify against yourself.
You don't.
It's the other people.
Yeah.
You're getting testimony from, for some reason, from two non-involved people that contradicts each other.
Right.
That's interesting. Yeah,
Yeah,
different
it's
problem.
really amazing how that happens. It's like, how can there be all these conflicting things when everybody's sworn to tell the truth? Anyway, Dad, continue. What verse are we on?
Up to
Oh.
nine. When a man gives to another an ass, an ox, a sheep, or any other animal to guard, and it dies or is injured or is carried off with no witness about, an oath before the Lord shall decide between the two of them that the one has not laid hands on the property of the other. The owner must acquiesce, and no restitution shall be made. But if the animal was stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. What does that mean? If the animal was stolen from him.
So, in other words,
Now, that contradicts what I was saying before. So that implies that he is liable. If he was entrusted to guard it, okay, that maybe that's the reason, because the reason it was given to him was to guard the sheep, to guard the
I think
animal,
that's what it's saying.
and
That if
it
some
was stolen.
unforeseen circumstance happened and the animal was taken away, he's not necessarily responsible. But if it turns out that he did steal it, then he's responsible, right?
Oh, you mean, I get it. Yeah, because this is saying it dies or is injured. Okay, yeah, and the other guy says, you stole my sheep, and he goes, no, and it was carried off.
Yeah, a tornado.
Yeah, or a coyote. Yeah.
Right. But if in fact,
If it was stolen, he shall make restitution. If it
yeah.
was torn by beasts, he shall bring it as evidence. In other words, he shall show, and he need not replace what has been torn by beasts. When a man borrows an animal from another and it dies or is injured, its owner not being with it, he must make restitution. If its owner was with it, no restitution need be made. But if it was hired, he's entitled to the hire. What they're having there is if you borrow, let's say you borrow a horse, or and the guy who lent it to you isn't there watching what you're doing. You could be abusing the horse, who knows what. And if it dies on the while it's in your care, you are responsible for it since you borrowed it from this other person. But if, on the other hand, you said, "Hey, would you plow my? I'll pay you $20 to plow my field with your horse," and the guy comes with the horse and plows the field, and while he's plowing, the horse dies. He can't say, "Well, you got to not only give me my $20, you got to pay for my horse." And I've seen contractors that you hire like that take that attitude. I broke my tractor doing your effing, field, like it's your fault that they broke their tractor
That's
when,
insane.
So actually, they're not right. But of course, again, you might end up in court over that one.
And hopefully lose. That's crazy.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I hire someone to paint the ceiling and his painting rod breaks. It's like, "You have to buy me a new painter." It's like, how is that my fault?
Yeah, no, it's not. That's the point. But if you borrowed the painting rod from your next door neighbor and you painted your ceiling and you broke it, you should get buy him a new one. That's the perfect example.
I
Yeah,
get that.
that's all.
Man, it's really about being accountable and taking
Yes. Yeah.
responsibility.
That's all. 15. If a man seduces a virgin for whom the bride price has not been paid and lies with her, he must take her, make her his wife by payment of a bride price. If a father refuses to give her to him, he must still weigh out silver in accordance with the bride price for virgins. You shall not tolerate a sorceress. Or in your case, it says, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, right?
Yes. You shall not permit a sorceress to live or permit.
Okay, and King James says, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live.
Was
Whoever
that?
lies with a beast shall be put to death.
Oh, I was going to say, was that what motivated the Salem witch trials?
Well, it was certainly that principle that they were trying to enforce. The problem with the Salem witch trials was that what's the definition of a witch? And how do you know who is and who is not one?
Exactly. You ask a girl out, she says, "No, you're a witch."
No, you can't. You see,
No,
that was the problem. There was no.
I know.
It would be as like if.
How would you prove that
If
you're not?
racism were a capital crime, we'd all be in trouble.
Yeah.
Because
Right.
there's no,
Because how can
what's
you
the
prove that?
definition of a racism? How do you prove you're not? If you say
Right.
you're
And how do you
not,
prove you're
that
not?
proves you are wrong. Only a racist would deny that he's a racist.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
that's unfortunately what happened with the witch trials, because you had the same kind of a situation. You
Right.
had
It's like, prove you're not. It's like,
a
how do I prove I'm not?
You had, they had no, there was no way to prove you weren't a witch. And
That's ridiculous.
ironically, the people who were making the accusations were likely demon possessed, not spellbound by a witch, but were demon possessed and were being motivated by that possession to make false accusations against innocent people.
Huh.
If you read
That's crazy.
the literature on this witch trials, you get that strong impression. It's particularly the daughters of the very respectable leaders of the Salem community who initiated the charges. They probably it just sound they just it it sounds like they very likely were demon possessed to me. And they were making the accusations that other people had
Wow.
cast these spells on him. And that's what started it off. And what and They were making accusations, most likely about people that they just didn't like.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You slighted them somehow, or you're prettier, then you gotta go,
So it was very evil time.
That's out of control, yeah.
Yeah, and it's something to remember. I don't know how we can forget it because we're doing a lot of things these days that are very much the same
Yeah.
kind of thing.
No, I mean, when you said if you're accused of being a racist, it's the same
It's
thing.
the same kind of thing.
I mean, we're just not being burned alive, but it's coming.
Where are we?
You said whoever lies with an animal shall surely be
Put
put
to
to
death. Whoever sacrifices to a god other than the Lord alone shall be proscribed.
That's another verse, Dad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. I think that's the next thing that we're going to see coming.
What?
Bestiality.
You already, it's already, but it's not a crime anymore.
Really?
I don't think it is. I don't think anybody's gonna. There are no sexual crimes anymore, John. The only thing there is, the only one, and that one's the one that's going to go, and that's
Pedophilia.
pedophilia. That's still verboten, you know,
But
where
you can have sex with animals now, and it's not illegal.
I don't think anybody's going to prosecute it.
Yeah. I mean, how could you? Right? I
They,
mean,
I don't think
openly,
anybody's going to prosecute
what if you say I identify as a donkey or whatever?
it. Yeah, no, but there might be on the books laws against it in different, especially in some of the more conservative states. But I don't think anybody would, if I don't think any DA would take it on.
Wow. So we're already there.
I think you're already there. I really do. I think it's so far, you're so far there that'll never even be brought to trial.
Wow. Yeah,
But
here you would be put to death for something like
yeah.
that. Which is interesting because you would think although it might be perverse, why is it worthy of death?
Because you know why? Because sexual perversion has a lot more consequences, spiritually speaking, than people give it credit for.
That's fun, profound, because I was watching a sermon by Charles Lawson today, and that's exactly what he said. With all this transgender thing, he says that the demonic activity and
Increase
sexual perversion.
it's related to demonic activity.
Yes. Right. He said it always goes hand in hand. That's exactly what you were saying, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, John. And that's why there were those kinds of prescriptions against that kind of behavior, because it wasn't that, oh, this is such a terrible sin in man's eyes. It's what's going on
And
behind the
what is
scenes
going
that
on
you
behind
don't
that?
see that.
Right. So that's a good distinction. It's not just that people are saying, oh, that's gross. Kill him.
Yeah, what we,
It
well,
wasn't like
it's not that.
that,
That's it. Be see it, put it in today's terms. They would say these, and this was the argument used historically. There's no justification for prosecuting sexual crimes because they're victimless. As long as there's consent, it's not a crime. It shouldn't be considered. So homosexuality, you know, it's perfect. Anything you can think of that might have been considered a crime, as long as you can say it's consensual. And the only time it's not, they'll make an exception is for someone who is underage, because they'll say that it can't be consensual by statute, because under 18, we have to assume that there was no
Right,
consent.
unless you want to change your gender, then that's okay.
Yeah, that's strange, but true. Okay. So
But the
the
line with animal was a capital offense because that is what were you saying again? Why was that worthy of death?
I'm saying it there are certain sexually perverse acts that have demonic overtones. A lot has to do with the idea of mixture. It's that you see brought out in Genesis. And the problem with interspecies sex is this is where you get the alien sex coming in. And that's sex with demons, actually.
Right, because you're referring to when the angels came in and
Yeah,
had
the
sex
angels. Yeah. And
with
so you have to be careful because what I think in those situations, you are opening yourself up to demon possession.
by having sex with animals.
For one instance.
I mean, you're
Again,
saying
I'm not going to say it's the
you're
only one.
saying sexual perversion in general
I think
opens you up to.
maybe we should put it the other way, that what the Bible condemns, the sexual behavior that the Bible condemns, much, and especially that behavior that has a death penalty associated with it, has that strong penalty associated with it because of the spiritual implications behind it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
All right.
Okay, so we're up to 20. You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not ill-treat any widow or orphan. If you do mistreat them, I will heed their outcry as soon as they cry out to me, and my anger shall blaze forth, and I will put you to the sword, and your own wives shall become widows and your children's orphans. If you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, do not act toward them as a creditor. Exact no interest from them. If you take your neighbor's garment in pledge, you must return it to him before the sun sets. It is his only clothing, its sole covering for his skin. And what else shall he sleep? Therefore, if he cries out to me, I will pay heed, for I am compassionate. You shall not revile God, nor put a curse upon a chieftain among your people. You shall not put off this. That's why I say we shouldn't be calling out all the leaders in our country.
Right. I was thinking that too.
We all have our opinions about what should be done, but that really doesn't give you a right to start calling other people fools, especially if they're leaders.
Yes. So we need to be careful of our criticism
Yes.
towards Biden and other people because
Yep.
even if we disagree with him, it says we shouldn't curse a ruler of our people.
Yep. You shall not put off the skimming of the first yield of your vats. You shall give me the firstborn among your sons. You shall do the same with your cattle and your flocks. 7 days it shall remain with its mother. On the 8th day, you shall give it to me. You shall be holy people to me. You must not eat flesh torn by beasts in the field. You shall cast it to the dogs. That a lot of the dietary rules, the imposition of a distinction between clean and unclean, were to imprint this idea of holiness on the people, that they were a holy people.
Yeah.
So that was the function of them. They didn't have, maybe
Yeah.
they had no other
So,
function than that, but that was the function. I mean, that if
right,
the fact
because
that
you're holy, that it would make sense not to eat shellfish because they usually pick up the trash and the carcasses.
Well, they were defined by God as being unclean,
Right, but I think it's because they eat
and
trash.
probably, yes.
And therefore, you as a holy, sanctified people shouldn't be eating something that picks up the trash of
Right,
people.
right. But it's not, it's the key thing to holiness is to understand that you don't sanctify yourself, God sanctifies you. It's not like, a lot of people want to be holy and they make up their own rules as to what holiness is. And I'm going to not do this and then I'm going to be holy. No, you're not holy unless God sets you apart for himself. And then as that, when you recognize that, that means it's going to, your behavior is going to be restricted then because you're going to be doing what God wants as opposed to what you want.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we finished two chapters, right?
Yeah.
Well, if we can end that, unless you have something more to say.
No, I think it was a really good
But it's
Bible study.
good. Okay.
I like these that we're taking more time because sometimes when you have a study and you go through four or five chapters, it's like, what are we doing? You
Yeah,
know?
well, today at first I didn't know we were going to get into it this deeply, but once I, you know, I we once we got into once we said, well, what can we get out of these things, then I could see, yeah, it was worthwhile to go
Yeah.
through it, pull it off, pull more out. I liked it, so yeah, it was
Yeah,
good.
I thought it was really good. Oh, Dad, so this, oh, did you stop the
I'm
recording?
going to stop it right now. Okay.